Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Lucas Audio production. Where entertainment is always free.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swagcast. This is Lothar Tuppen, current assistant director and soon-to-be main director of Pendant Productions' Wonder Woman, Champion of Themyscira, over at www.pendantaudio.com. The reason why I'm sitting in for Bill tonight is that, well, there seems to be a misunderstanding involving a dead body, three fondue forks, and the best dim sum to come out of San Francisco's Chinatown district. I'm pretty sure that Fu Manchu is framing my buddy Bill, but until this can be straightened out, we both thought it would be best for him to lay low for a while. Now, in the meantime, I thought I could maybe track down a good private investigator to help him out, and Candy Matson seemed the most appropriate one for the job. Candy Matson was the private eye star of Candy Matson Yukon 28209, an NBC West Coast show which first aired in March of 1949 and was created by Monty Masters. He cast his wife, Natalie Parks, in the title role of this sassy, sexy PI. Her understated love interest, Lieutenant Ray Mallard, was played by Henry Leff, while her assistant and best pal, aptly named Rembrandt Watson, was the voice of Jack Thomas. Every show opened with a ringing telephone and our lady PI answering it with Candy Matson, Yukon 28209, and then the organ swung into the theme song, Candy. Each job took Candy from her apartment on Telegraph Hill into some actual location in San Francisco. The writers, overseen by Monty, worked plenty of real Bay Area locations into every plot. Candy was bright, tough, and fearless. She used her pistol infrequently, but was unintimidated by bad guys regardless of circumstances. Threats, assaults, and even bullets would usually produce a caustic but clever response for this blonde sleuth. She and Mallard were frequently working the same case, but she usually solved it first. OTR experts generally agree that this show was the finest of all the female PIs. Although the show ran until May of 1951, it never attracted a sponsor, although the first season's final episode ended with the announcement that Candy Matson is San Francisco's most popular program. Now, honestly, it was the clever banter, sheer tongue-in-cheek fun, and the vibrant use of San Francisco itself as a character that made Candy Matson stand out and overshadow the mysteries themselves. Many of the little in-jokes and commentary about the city are as accurate today as they were 60-plus years ago. And as someone who spends a lot of time in San Francisco, these shows are a true delight to me, and I hope they are to you too. The three episodes we have for you today include The Cable Car Case, with its great use of the cable car lines and the maritime life of the San Francisco Bay; The Devil in the Deep Freeze, with its use of San Francisco's famous Italian and soon-to-be beatnik district of North Beach and the Civic Center District; and Symphony of Death, with some great acting on the part of the composer of said symphony. While Candy's trying to clear Bill's good name, sit back and enjoy Candy Matson, Yukon 28209. If she's as successful as she was with all of her other cases, I'm sure Bill will be back before the show's over to say a few words. And now, Candy Matson.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Do you have a little unsolved murder in your home? Got some blackmail you want to unload? Are you the victim of some vulgar extortionist? I know a girl you should meet. She may not be the greatest private eye in the world, so what if it does cost you $300 or $400? She sure is sweet. She's Candy Matson. Like to meet her?
Hello.
Candy Matson?
Well, I wasn't sure when I looked in the mirror this morning.
Had a rough night, eh?
Oh, there have been rougher ones. Look, Voice, before you get caught with my receiver down, who are you and what do you want?
As to who I am, you'll find out very shortly. What I want is you.
How romantic and over the phone yet.
Let me finish. What I want is you to lay off that cable car business.
Oh, that? Well, I'm afraid I can't. You see, I was sitting beside him when they discovered his transfer had been punched, sort of permanently. That's how things happen with me. I get into the craziest routines. You see, I used to be a model. I've been told I have the proper displacement for such a career. But I found there wasn't enough money in it. A girl has to maintain a nice apartment on Telegraph Hill, keep enough clothes to highlight the displacement I mentioned, and also eat, doesn't she? Sure. So I turn private eye. You meet a better class of people, mostly named Rigger or Mortis. Now take this cable car deal. It's positively fantastic. But after all, this is radio, isn't it? Like to hear how the whole thing happened? Leave us trip along to Act One. I wanted to get downtown that morning, but I couldn't take the F car on Stockton. They were ripping up about 87 streets, which is par for the course. So I walked down Telegraph Hill and up to Mason. That's where the Bay and Powell cable car stopped.
All aboard! Come on, Lana, show that shapely ankle. We gotta make the Fairmont by Whitsuntide.
The car was loaded, and so was the character next to me. I tried to budge into the seat between him and the fisherman's wharf dowager, but I couldn't quite make it. I'd forgotten my shoehorn. Say, pardon me, but would you mind reading your Wall Street Journal over that-a-way a bit? I'd like to sit in here.
Oh, if you insist.
A knight of old. He budged his hips a quarter of an inch, and I slipped in, ready for my rocket ride over the hill and down into town. The trip, as usual, was uneventful. Three smashed fenders and several choice words I'd never heard before, but I wrote them down. By the time our prairie schooner reached the turntable at Market Street, the crowd on the car had thinned out. But Buster was still beside me, his head buried in common and preferred.
Market Street!
I started to get down.
Hey, lady, take your boyfriend with you. We're heading back up the hill.
Boyfriend? I'll sue. He looks like the advance man for Lewis and Clark.
How do you like that? He fell asleep over a Stockton bond.
I looked again. Hipsy wasn't asleep. Hipsy was stone cold dead on Market. What a twist. I, who always went on the prowl for a whodunit, got one literally tossed into my lap. He just hadn't gone out of this world serene-like. Oh, no. There was a steady slurp-slurp of blood trickling down his vest just north by northeast of the equator. After a half-hour wait full of questioning by homicide leg men, I knew my morning shopping tour was rained out. And after all, I was only going to buy an emerald clip to match the glint in my eye. Well, that would have to wait. I knew the next step. I grabbed a cab home. I wasn't long in waiting. Right on cue. And if it was the right cue, it would be Lieutenant Ray Mallard from headquarters, daintily pressing his cuticles against my apartment buzzer. I was right.
What?
I've been expecting you. Come on in, Mallard.
You've been expecting me? Why, Candy?
Naive little rover boy, you. Have a drink?
No, I'm not in the mood. Just make it a double.
Sit down, Mallard. Let's be civilized. Take off your hat.
It is off.
Oh?
Candy, for once I'm puzzled.
You're just saying that.
Yeah, because it's true. I've checked and rechecked. No matter how many loose ends I tie together, I still get no connection between you and Dwight Ellsworth.
Dwight Whosworth?
Ellsworth. Your extremely limp traveling companion on the cable this morning?
Mallard, I can give you an angle on that.
Yeah?
Yeah. The angle being that I didn't know him from Adam.
Level?
Straight. Oh, look, honeypot, this mediocre dialogue is getting us nowhere. What did you haul your size 11s in here for?
Oh, frankly, I don't know. Here, fill it up, will you?
Well, you're not just going around in circles, Mallard. You're going around in doubles.
Yeah, yeah. Like I've said before, Candy, you've got a pretty view from here.
Oh? Wait till I turn around.
I mean from your window. Look at that ship down there, just docking.
Hmm? Where?
Down there. There's romance for you. Probably just in from the Far East.
Here's your drink.
Oh, thanks.
You know, it is sort of romantic. Don't you think it'd be fun to jump on a tramp like that and whisk off to the South Sea?
Hmm?
On a honeymoon?
No.
That's what I thought. South Sea. Mallard.
Don't call me Mallard.
Why not? We're just playing for ducks, aren't we?
Very crisp. Playing for ducks. No, Candy, we aren't. Not in this case. We've got a dead man in our hands. Rudy Toot Toot shot right through the heart. And you were sitting next to him.
Sure, sure. Go on now. Get out of here.
What?
You heard me. Lift your hindquarters and get back to headquarters.
Candy, I don't like that look. You've got something on your mind.
Yeah, yeah, but you wouldn't recognize it if I told you about it.
One word of warning. Don't dabble. You're in deep enough. Got it?
Got it. Here's your hat. Grab it. So long, Mallard. See you around a jailhouse sometime. Fi-fo-fum. 'Twas then I smelled a big fat sea. That great, big, kind of attractive Mallard. He missed the boat. Oh, he saw it, but he missed it. It was that ship he saw docking. That was the first time I came out of the dark since my Toonerville ride down the hill in the morning. I needed help, so I called an old friend of mine, if you can call that help. Rembrandt Watson was his name. He was a photographer and other things. He spent most of his life in the dark room dabbling with bottles. His negatives and prints were sharp. His thought processes, not quite. But he'd given me assistance in the past, so I called him.
Rembrandt Watson speaking. Photography, portraits, and camera work.
Yes, Rembrandt, I know.
Also available for gardening, janitorial service, and babysitting.
Rembrandt, it's Candy.
Especially at the over 21. Who? Candy?
Now you're tuned in.
How dare you, baggage. I was experimenting with a new type of formula.
90 proof for 100.
100. And Candy, it works beautifully. There's a delightful little pixie in a pink ballet skirt in my living room.
Well, leave her there and get over here immediately to my place. Take a cab. I'll pay for
it. I'd much rather have a handsome carriage with a brace of chestnuts.
You've got them in your head. Now just do as I say and get over here. Float in, Rembrandt.
Gadfrey. Where's the man to take me cloak, gloves, and topper?
You're wearing a sport coat and slacks, and you know I have no man.
And therein lies your basic trouble, my dear. You have no man.
Now, Rembrandt.
Every man should have a woman. Every woman should have a man. It's the incontrovertible law of the universe. Candy, you should have a man.
You?
Sure. I'm no longer a man. I'm a sprite, transcending the world.
Well, stop transcending a moment and come down to earth. We've got a job to do.
How poetic. How idyllic. We've got a job to do. For money?
Eventually.
Oh, one of those. Very well, my dear. Bring me up to date.
Well, I don't really know if I can or not.
Good. Then I shall leave and return to me formula.
Oh, no. What I mean is, the whole story is so fantastic you'd never believe it.
I might. Try me, Candy.
Well, I get on a cable car and sit next to a character reading the Wall Street Journal.
A strange coupling. A cable car and the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. And when we get to the end of the line, my friend next to me is dead.
Probably the ride down the hill frightened him to death.
Uh-uh. He looked like a used punch board. He had a neat little bullet hole through his heart.
Candy, my little ballerina friend in the pink skirt is more believable than what you just told me.
I told you it was fantastic, but none of how it happened. Now, sooner or later, Mallard is going to come out of his fog. And when he does, I'm going to be out of a fee.
A fee that so far doesn't exist, my pretty.
It will, if my hunch is right. Now, here's what I want you to do. Go down to the Chronicle and get all the back files you can on Southern Island Steamship Company.
The Chronicle? A pleasure. I have a few questionable companions there who indulge in formulas.
Stay away from those companions and just do as I ask.
Very well, my dove. I go, but entirely against my will. And where will you be?
Around town, Rembrandt. I've got to do some legwork.
Let me assure you, Candy, you have just the right equipment for it, too.
Mm-hmm. What a joint. I'll bet they mount slit gullets on the walls instead of deer heads. Well, come on, Candy. Get your tools out and screw up your courage.
Yeah, miss, what'll it be?
Nothing right at the moment except information.
Information, water, both free. What do you want to know?
Well, I'm looking for the purser off of Dwight Sonia. I hear he does his shore duty in here.
That's right. Name Campbell. That head on the table over there belongs to him.
Thanks. Hello, sailor. Hey, Campbell. Wake up. Come on, snap out of it.
Who are you? What do you want?
My name is Candy Matson. I want to ask a question.
Oh, I'm only drinking. Go away.
Not until I find out what I want to know. Dwight Ellsworth was murdered this morning.
What?
I thought that would bring you to.
Well, that's the nicest news I've heard since VJ Day. What do you want to know?
Where does his brother live?
That stooge. He's got about as much spine as a water eel.
Never mind. I want to find him. He seems to keep his whereabouts as secret as an atomic stockpile.
The whole family ought to be knocked off. He lives out in Seacliff, 25 Dashiell Road.
Good. Bartender, buy my friend a little reward, and one for yourself, too. Well, so far, so good. Oh, how did I know about Campbell the purser? Well, you see, I have quite a few friends, most of whom my pal Mallard doesn't approve. So I grabbed the cab and navigated the driver out towards Seacliff. It was so foggy I couldn't see the meter. But I paid him anyway, gave him a neutral tip, and dismissed him. There it was, 25 Dashiell Road, an austere-looking cabana, one that dared you to ring the front doorbell. I dared. I had the awful feeling I should have been around at the side door delivering hand laundry.
Good evening.
Well, except for the fog, yes. Is Mr. Ellsworth in?
Yes, he is. But I'm afraid I must ask you to leave. There's been a death in the family.
I know. That's why I'm here.
Come in, please.
Thank you.
Walk this way, please.
Oh, I'm afraid I couldn't, even if I lived to be 100.
Mind your tongue, young lady. You're in the house of an Ellsworth.
Oh, hoity-toity, the old babe had delusions of grandeur. Well, no need to get uppity with me. I've mingled with royalty. I once played a bit part in a Rita Hayworth picture. But this old gal was really something. She couldn't have been more than 45, yet looked like something out of the Barretts of Wimpole Street. She ushered me into a large-ceilinged living room, and there on the divan was my boy, his head lowered into his hands and quite obviously touched. Quite obviously.
Roger, this young lady is here to see you. I don't believe you mentioned your name.
Candy Matson.
Matson? Are you in shipping, too?
Of a sort.
This is my wife, Miss Matson. You'll pardon me if I don't seem hospitable, but my brother was murdered this morning.
I know. I was sitting next to him when it happened.
You were?
Don't talk to her, Roger. I don't trust her. This whole thing is a threat of some kind.
No, it's not a threat. It's a business proposition. I'll come right to the point. You see, I'm a private detective.
Oh, one of those persons.
Put your nose back down, Mrs. Ellsworth. I want to get the show on the road. Yes, I'm a private detective, and I'm in a spot, too. The police think I'm connected with the case in some way, so I'm here for a double purpose.
I'm listening, Miss Matson.
Roger, I forbid you to speak with this woman.
Too late, Mrs. Ellsworth. Now, this is it. I'm in this business to make money. Give me a check now for $300, and I'll find out who killed your brother. And I'll also clear myself.
Roger, I'm warning you.
Naturally, you want to see the killer of your brother brought to justice, don't you, Mr. Ellsworth? Don't you?
Yes. Here, I'll make a check out right now.
Thank you. Just make it out to Candy Matson. Payable today. A lovely collection of guns you have, Mr. Ellsworth. You hunt much?
Yes. My wife and I are quite fond of shooting. She's an excellent shot. There you are.
Thank you. I'll be in touch with you sometime tomorrow. Mr. Reed didn't say a word. She just stood there against the fireplace and shot sparks through me. After I waved the check in the air a few times to dry the ink, she showed me to the door.
Very clever, aren't you? taking advantage of a weak-willed man.
I wonder who made him that way.
Don't cash that check. I mean it. Don't cash that check.
Mrs. Ellsworth, $300. I need the money, badly. I need some new rolls for my player piano. I buzzed back downtown. I wanted to cash that check in a hurry. I knew of only one person who would give me the crisp green at that hour of the night. Uncle Charlie, the honest miller who ran the chase room. Uncle Charlie, in the strict sense of the word, was a gentleman. So with a tender little pat on my cheek, he cashed the check and I went up Telegraph Hill and home. All of a sudden, my eyes did a couple of inverted loops. Oh, my lights were on. Who's in here? All right, speak up.
Oh, Candy, the light of my life. Come join our party.
Oh, Rembrandt, you gave me a scare.
You don't scare easy either, Candy. Got something on your mind?
And Mallard. Well, how ducky, a midnight soiree. What goes on here?
Well, that chicken you had in the icebox is delicious.
Was delicious. Looks like you've done everything but eat the bones.
Your vintage is superb, too, Candy. Have a little formula?
No. Now, come on, what gives?
That's my line, Candy. What gives? You're in on something, and I want to know about it.
Oh, Mallard, believe me, it's nothing. I'm just trying to parley a couple of hunches.
Tall hunches. Look at all those clippings on the South Sea Island Steamship Company. What are they for?
I meant to tell you, Candy, I had remarkable success down at the Chronicle. There's everything you want on that steamship line.
Oh, Rembrandt, did you have to tell the whole world?
Candy, you chide me unnecessarily. I merely had the clippings on the table when Hawkshaw here walks in on me.
Okay, Candy, take it from there.
I can't tell you yet, Mallard. Nothing makes sense yet. I've got about four loose ends that need tying off.
I'd only put two men to following you. I'd save myself a lot of grief.
2 days, that's all, Mallard. Just give me 2 days. I think I'll have it for you.
All right. But don't forget, the boys down at Kearney Street headquarters don't love you the way I do. 2 days. No more or less. I gotta go. Thanks for the fowl, chicken.
Ah, very gay. Here, Rembrandt, here's $50 for you.
50? My word. What's all this talk about a recession?
Go on and take it. Go someplace and stabilize the economy. I whipped through the old newspaper clipping. It was all there. Fire at sea on Ellsworth's ship. Two seamen lost off Ellsworth's ship near Honolulu. South Sea Island Line ship loses rudder in storm. On and on it went over a period of 3 years. I threw the papers back on the table. Helped myself to some of Rembrandt's formula. Turned down the lights and went out on the porch. The bay was dark except for an occasional path of light from a passing freighter. I sat down to think and think. Then, click, click, just like that, two little tumblers in my mind fell into place. Only one thing to do, and that was to do it the hard way. The next morning, just as the ferry building siren was announcing 8 o'clock to downtown San Francisco, I got Rembrandt on the phone.
Candy, what on earth are you calling me for at this hour?
Can't help it. There's work to be done.
I did my work last night so extremely well that I'm just going to bed now.
Sorry, you'll just have to delay your sack time. Meet me at the corner of Mason and Union in 10 minutes, right where the cable car stops.
Now, what are we going to do?
We're going to take a cable car ride.
What? One of those bouncing, jerky little contraptions? Not the way I feel this morning.
Oh, yes, you are. Union and Mason in 10 minutes. All right, Rembrandt, get on.
This is the silliest thing you've ever done, Candy.
Maybe. We'll see. Dwight Ellsworth was already on the car when I got on here. And alive.
How could you tell?
He mumbled something when I asked him to move over.
Sounds logical. Although I once remember stumbling into a corpse who mumbled for hours after it had been liquidated.
Rembrandt was in one of his rambling moods, so I let him alone. The car pulled over Mason Street, down Washington, and then swung on to Powell and up the hill. Now I watched the buildings and apartments carefully. There was a little red brick building, now a big apartment house, a woman's residence club, and so on. Then over the hill, more apartments, and the possibilities petered out at Bush. Well, only one thing to do. Canvass all those blocks between Washington and Bush. Okay, Rembrandt, Off the car. The
strangest corpse I ever did see. What'd you say, Candy?
Off the car. Come on.
Now what? I just want to get to bed.
Well, not for a long time, Boy Blue. Now, here's the pitch. You take this building, and I'll take the next. We'll alternate as we go along. Ask if a tall woman with a horsey face and dressed something like Queen Victoria ever lived around here.
Oh, Candy.
I know it sounds wild, but it's got to be done.
A horse with a tall face and dressed something like...
Oh, Rembrandt, look at me. Get that smoke out of your brain. A tall woman with a horsey face and dressed something like Queen Victoria. You got it?
Got it.
Okay, get going. It was slow and tiresome. And the answers I got.
A tall gal dressed like Queen Victoria? Oh, sister!
That was about par.
Nope, nobody like that ever lived here.
Are you positive?
A dame who fits that description? Yeah, I'm positive.
The morning wore on, and so did we. We were over on the other side of California Street now, so we stopped and had a bite to eat. I had pickles with mine, and Rembrandt had olives on toothpicks in a glass. And again, we picked up the hunt. My heart was suddenly making with a rumba. There, just on the other side of Clay, in front of a three-story red brick house, was a police squad car. There was a little knot of people gathered around. Daintily lifting my crinoline, I did a Mel Patton down the block and up the front steps. I didn't have any trouble finding the room. The door was wide open, and there was a body on the floor. Four representatives of the law were buzzing back and forth. One of the buzzees was Mallard.
Well, my little ambassador of violence. Why is it you're always around the extremely dead, Candy?
I've got no time to brandy the ad libs, Mallard. Who is it?
I don't know yet. No identification.
Let me see.
A pen pal, maybe.
I was right. I knew it.
Knew it? Knew what?
You're right. He was a pen pal. He wrote me a check last night for $300. His name is Roger Ellsworth.
Very interesting. Must be open season on Ellsworth. Okay, Candy, time you filled in the blanks. Start.
Wait a minute. I want to look at the window over here. Mm-hmm. Mallard, there are a couple of younger Ellsworths living around town here. I'm sure you'd like to see them stay healthy.
Yeah?
Get out to 25 Dashiell Road and pick up an old crone also named Ellsworth. 5 will get you 20. She's the one you're after.
All right. But you get back to your place and stay put, understand? I want to have a more illuminating chat with you.
Oh, Mallard, I'm just like putty in your hands. The moon was coming up over Diablo and spraying a path of silver on the bay. Still no Mallard. I wondered what could be wrong. Well, this was it. This was the showdown.
Have you seen a tall face with a horsey woman?
Oh, Rembrandt.
Candy, I'm so mad at you I could... what's the use?
Now what's the matter?
What's the matter, she says. I've been roving all over Powell Street ringing doorbells. Where did you go, you traitor?
Oh, Rembrandt, I'm sorry. In the excitement, I forgot all about you.
What excitement?
There's been another murder.
In a moment, there's going to be another. I'm looking right at you, Candy.
Oh, cool off. Have some formula and stop snorting steam. What was that?
Your window, Candy. It just shattered.
What? Oh, wait a minute. That window didn't shatter by itself. Quick, get the lights, Rembrandt. Now duck down here.
What sort of a silly game are we playing now?
This isn't a game, believe me.
Candy! Candy, are you all right?
Yikes, it's the gumshoe.
Yes, I'm all right. Where are you, Mallard?
Over here. Two houses over. We've got your girlfriend trapped on the roof next to you. Don't move and stay covered.
Okay.
All right, Mrs. Ellsworth. Are you coming down peacefully, or do we have to play cops and robbers?
I'm not coming down until I get that candy mattress. She did it! She forced me to kill my own brother-in-law!
Have it your own way. Okay, loosen her up a bit, boys.
Better than the 4th of July.
Keep your head down, Rembrandt.
Oh, is that what was up?
Ready to come down, Mrs. Ellsworth?
No, I'm not! That hateful woman! She's ruined my whole life! All my plans! Just because of her snooping and prying! She's going to die, I tell you! Ugh.
It was a miracle, Candy. You must have moved slightly just as she shot at you.
Well, it was too close, I can tell you. She's dead?
Oh, decidedly. I think she was dead before she hit the ground. That one shot got her. We went out to her house, and she was just driving off when we got there. We trailed her up to North Beach, lost her for a block, and then spotted a car at the top of the hill here. We arrived just as she was getting on the roof next door. Okay, now you tell me your little dream.
Well, it was that ship docking that set my wheels going around. The name Ellsworth started burning in back somewhere. Mm-hmm. You saw the clippings we dug up.
Yeah.
The South Sea Island steamship lines were slowly being sabotaged. I did some checking, and I found that the insurance companies weren't going to renew.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't tie that in sooner.
Oh, it's just that you have too many things on your mind, Mallard, dear. I went out to the place on Dashiell Road, and when I left, I was pretty sure the old girl had knocked off her brother-in-law.
Why?
Well, for several reasons. One, she was a venomous old witch. Two, you've never seen such a collection of guns in all your life. And her husband admitted she was a darn good shot. I also saw one little pot gun that was very interesting. It had a silencer on it.
Uh-huh. That was the one she used on you tonight.
And also the one she used on Dwight Ellsworth from the window of that apartment where you found her husband.
How do you know?
Go back there. You'll see a nice little bullet hole in the curtain with burned powder all around it.
Now, don't tell me that...
Yes, I'm telling you that she rented that place knowing that her brother-in-law always went downtown on a certain cable car. She waited that morning until we were riding by, and she plunked him.
I have now heard everything.
And the reason? Dwight Ellsworth, rather than fighting the insurance companies, had decided to sell his steamship line. But the old gal thought she'd beat him to the punch by knocking him off. The steamship company would then fall into her husband's hands.
Yeah. What about her husband?
Well, after he gave me the check and I left, they evidently had a fearful row, and she spilled the beans. Somehow she lured him down to that place on Powell and gave him some lead poisoning, too. And that's all there is to it.
Candy, I wish you'd have told me all these things earlier. We might have been able to save the life of Roger Ellsworth.
It wouldn't do any good. Because if she hadn't killed him, I was going to.
What?
Mm-hmm. While I was waiting for you to get here, the phone rang. It was Uncle Charlie, the honest miller. That no good Roger Ellsworth. His check bounced like a brand new golf ball. What's so funny, Mallard?
Listen in again to the further adventures of Candy Matson, Girl Sucker.
Well, that's the way it goes. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. In this case, nobody did, except Rembrandt. He'd stocked his darkroom with $50 worth of formula. And not the kind you use on negatives, either. Let's see. Murder on a cable car. Dwight and Roger Ellsworth done in, as well as the old gal. One check that bounced. It really does sound fantastic, doesn't it? But I told you this was radio, didn't I? Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I did come out ahead of that. On the way out, Mallard leaned on and kissed me. The first time it ever happened. You know, at times, it's kind of fun to be in the arms of the law.
Listen again next week at the same time. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight were Helen Klebe, Jack Cahill, and Harry Bechtel, Jack Thomas as Rembrandt, and Henry Leff as Mallard. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and produced by Monty Masters. This has been a presentation of NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Got an old corpse kicking around you want identified? Know of any good murders you want solved? We've got just the girl for you. Her name is Candy Matson. Mighty cute, too. She fills out a size 12 suit to just the right proportions. Soft blonde hair, two sparkling blue eyes, and all in all, she looks as though she might have stepped right off a Varga calendar. And what's more, she's a private eye. You scoff? You ridicule? I'll let you see for yourselves. Listen, she's talking on the phone right now.
Hello, Candy Matson.
Hello, Miss Matson. I'm afraid you don't know me.
That makes it even. You don't know me. Let's go from there.
I've read about you in the papers, Miss Matson. You handle confidential cases.
That's right. However, there's a little matter of a fee involved.
Yes, yes, I know. I can pay.
That's item number one. Now to item number two. What's the confidential case?
I can't possibly tell you on the phone, Miss Matson. I said it was confidential.
Okay. Where do you want to talk?
I am the proprietor of a restaurant, the Charlemagne in North Beach.
Oh, yeah. I ate there once.
Oh, that's nice.
No, it wasn't. I didn't like the food.
Oh.
However, I'll overlook it. Do you want to talk in about an hour?
That will be fine, Miss Matson.
Good. And your name would be...
Martinello. Carlo Martinello.
Okay, Mr. Martinello. And have some ink in your pen. It costs money just to talk. I probably sounded rough and commercial, but you have to be in this racket. Most people look on a private eye as a musician. They invite you to a party and expect you to bring your harp for free. But I learned the hard way a long time ago. So now they pay in advance and take their chances later. That's the way it was with this Martinello. I was at home in my penthouse on Telegraph Hill out on the porch taking a sun bath when the phone rings and it's this Carlo character. That part was all right because I can always use new customers. But what made me mad was the fact that I had to stop listening to the 49ers belt the bejabers out of the Cleveland Browns at Kezar Stadium. But I followed through and uncovered a couple of very done-in bodies along the way. Do you like the grotesque in your whodunit? Then follow me and we'll tiptoe lightly through the Tibbets, the Ponds, and the Baccalonies, because part of the story unfolds at the Opera House. Reluctantly, I dressed into something Charlemagne-ish, turned off the 49ers-Cleveland game, and went down to talk to Martinello. His place was typical. Located on Powell Street, a garish neon sign, and as you walked in, the place was air-conditioned by eau de garlic.
Yes, miss. You wish a table?
I wish a table, yes. With the right party, I'm looking for the owner.
I am the owner.
I am Candy Matson.
Oh, Miss Matson. Walk this way, please.
If I could walk that way, I'd revive vaudeville.
Pardon?
Where is your office?
Right over here. Allow me. After you, signorina.
Thank you, signor.
Here, sit down, please.
Thanks. Now, Martinello, what's on your mind?
Always, all my life, I have run a very nice, respectable place.
Mm-hmm.
Until this morning.
What's with this morning?
I go down to the basement. My icebox is down there. That is where I keep all my meat.
So, you wanted some ground rounds?
Oh, no. Perhaps I'd better show you. Please, you will come with me.
Martinello led the way out of his office and down a flight of stairs. A cold blast hit my face. A musty aroma smothered my nostrils, and if I had had a phobia about darkness, I'd have ducked out then. But I followed the guy, and we ended up in front of a refrigerator about the size of an Inquisition chamber. He opened the door, and it was the usual restaurant icebox, choice legs of lamb hanging from hooks, potential fillets, and thick New York cuts. The box was cold, and I started to shiver. Not from the refrigeration, though, because over in the corner was a man. He looked like something out of a long-lost Arctic expedition. He had a long, flowing mustache, every bristle of which was coated with ice. He was quite frozen and quite dead. I slammed the door shut and reeled out. The sight had staggered my thought processes. Martinello reached over by a salami slicing table and turned on a Mazda. A weak affair that cast dim shadows about the damp basement. Is that your little surprise?
Yes, Mr. Matson. That is what I was greeted with this morning.
Have you notified the police?
Oh, no.
Why not?
As I told you, I have run a very respectable place. And, too, that is why I am hiring you.
You can get in trouble, you know.
Yes, that is why you must help me. Please, Miss Matson, say you will help me. I will pay you anything you say.
I stick my neck out in the strangest places. Now it's a refrigerator. Okay, Martinello, $2,000.
What?
Make up your mind. Either I freeze your assets or the police find your frozen friend.
Yes. All right. Come. I give you the money now.
Now we're getting somewhere.
What about him?
Oh, he'll keep. He's on ice. Well, this was one for the books. Refrigeration the ugly way. I had to ask a few questions if I was to get anywhere, such as like, do you know the guy?
No.
Had you ever seen him before?
No.
Who was the last one to close the icebox last night?
I was.
Does it lock from the inside?
Unfortunately, yes.
I was getting places like Wiley was with Hauser. It was inevitable. I had to take my courage in my hand and go down and look at that thing again. There it was, a male Mona Lisa etched in ice. This time I looked closer, I had to. And as I did, I realized I wasn't going to get any identification because this guy was a study in crimson. Underneath all that coating of ice, he was dressed in a devil's costume. I slammed the door once again and went upstairs. There I gave Martinello strict orders not to do a thing. Usually in cases like this, you have to wait for a break. They come along like a forcing hand in poker. So I went home to do some thinking. As I arrived, there was an old friend of mine, Rembrandt Watson.
Hello, Dove. I'd almost given up.
Rembrandt, how did you get in?
Your door was open, dear. I took the liberty of coming in.
Oh, sure, that's okay.
How are things, Candy?
All right, I guess. I'm kind of bush, though. I feel about as devaluated as a British pound.
You look wonderful, Dove. What's wrong?
I've got a deal, but I don't know where to start.
Anything I can help you with?
No, thanks, Rembrandt. If I told you about it, you wouldn't believe it.
I've never doubted you in the past, dear.
I know. Well, I was just called in by a minestrone merchant in North Beach. The guy is stuck with a corpse.
That's about par for the course.
The deceased had been sealed in the icebox overnight. I've never seen one like that before.
That's the way it is, dear. Many are called, but few are frozen.
Oh, get out of here.
But, Dove, I just got here.
I know, but I've got to change and get down to see Mallard.
I'll wait for you, Candy. I haven't seen the gumshoe since before me vacation.
All right. I'll be with you in a few moments. I did a fast change, and Rembrandt and I climbed into my car, and we dropped off Telegraph Hill on Don Carney Street. The Hall of Justice, where Mallard hangs his star, is only a few blocks away, so we made it in about 5 minutes. Inspector Ray Mallard, Homicide, San Francisco Police. A lovable, shaggy dog type of character. Very keen with the crime, but dumb with the dame. Me, for instance. If I want him to say yes, he says no, and vice versa.
Well, my ever-loving Candy. What's new in the private eye business?
Very little. How's the legitimate fat foot racket?
Oh, we're holding our arches up. Well, and Rembrandt, I haven't seen you since Pup was a Hector.
Please, Inspector, you're making your mixer pause.
Who writes this dialogue?
I'm pretty weak, I know. What's on your mind, Candy?
A character named Carlo Martinello. Have you got anything on him? What's so funny, Mallard?
Nothing, except I eat lunch there about every day of the week.
Well, answer my question.
Well, there's nothing on Martinello. Arrested a couple of times during Prohibition. He was dabbling in grappa a lot under the table.
Have you's got a case against the guy, Detective Matson?
Oh, cut it out.
No, seriously. Why do you want to check on the guy, Candy?
No reason, just thought I'd ask.
Well, Martinello's okay. Just trying to make a living. Only thing I don't like, he loves to sing to his customers.
That'd be enough to bankrupt him right there.
Anything else I can do?
No, that takes care of everything.
I tell you what, I'm through in about an hour. I'll take you up to Martinello's for dinner. You can see for yourself.
No, that's all right.
Okay, Candy, give.
Why, Mallard, dear, what on earth do you mean?
You know something about something. I want in.
Mallard, and I want you to believe this. I mean it sincerely. If I knew something, you'd be the last to know about it.
He's got something there. Come, Dove, believe it or what.
I hate to do things like that to Mallard. He's been of great help to me in the past. More than once, he's saved my life. But on a deal like this, you have to play it close. After all, a girl has to make a living. For the first time in a long time, I was completely baffled as to where to start. Something had to be done about that cadaver in the icebox, but what? While I was beetling my eyebrows, Rembrandt invited me up to his place for tea. He lives on California Street, just down away from Old St. Mary's, and only a bail bond broker's reach from the Hall of Justice. So I accepted.
Do forgive the looks of the place, Candy, dear. I had a meeting my philatelist group last night.
Philatelists?
The stamp collectors, dear.
Well, I know what they are, but I didn't think they could make such a mess.
You don't know philatelists. Sit down, though. Make yourself comfortable. I shan't be a moment.
That's all right.
And Candy, dear, why the wrinkles?
I've got cause for wrinkles. This chap in the icebox, Rembrandt. There's something I didn't tell you. He was dressed in a devil's costume.
There, there, dear. Your tea will ready in just a minute. You'll feel better.
I know it sounds crazy, but it's true.
What are you going to do, Candy?
I don't know. I can't leave him in that refrigerator forever.
We'll get him out, dear. I hate to think of a corpse catching pneumonia. Oh, excuse me, Candy. Help yourself to the tea.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do? Rembrandt Watson Enterprises.
Quiet down.
Who? Oh, hello, Templeton. How are all your steamships? Oh, that's good. What? Could I use to what? To the opera? Of course I could. Righto, I'll pick them up at your office. Thank you, Templeton. Goodbye. Candy, dear, do you like the opera?
I can take it or leave it. Why?
It suddenly develops that I have 2 tickets tomorrow night for Tales of Hoffman.
Oh, Rembrandt, I don't think I
can... Come, Candy. It'll do you good. You've been working too hard. You need a little relaxation.
Tales of Hoffman, hmm? Okay. Who's the pal who gave them to you?
An old friend of mine, Templeton Woodruff. He runs a steamship to Java and other places Ezio Pinza sings about.
I finished the tea and left. Right then, the only opera I could think of was the one going on in an icebox at Martinello's. I've always tried to play straight with Ray Mallard, so I decided to tell Martinello my plan.
Miss Matson, I don't think it's such a good idea.
Good evening, Carlo. I want to talk to you.
That's what I mean. There's a gentleman here who...
Well, you've got a gentleman. That's fine. 3 more and you've got a crowd. What I want to talk to you about is this.
You don't understand. The gentleman I'm talking about is from the police.
The police?
Yeah. Hello, Candy.
Mallard.
How about some scallopini?
Well, up jumps it. Hello, Mallard, dear.
I had an idea you'd like dinner here tonight. Do you know my boy, Carlo?
Yes, we've met.
How do you do? How do you do? The signorina wish something to eat?
No. No, thanks. I want to talk to you, though, Mallard.
Sure. Come on into my booth. We'll share some salami.
No, thanks. I want to see you downstairs.
I don't think the food's as good down there.
I agree, but it isn't the food. I'm talking about murder. Once again, I headed down into the catacombs of the Charlemagne. This time, the act was a double. Mallard was right behind me. Then I looked around. We were a trio. Martinello was right behind Mallard. This is it.
This is what?
This is an icebox. Inside, you'll find a body dressed in a devil's costume.
Okay, Carlo, let's humor the lady. Open the thing, will you?
Yes. I'll open it.
Lovely view of the beef.
It's gone. The body's gone. Okay, Martinello, start talking and make some sense while you're doing it.
Please, Miss Matson, I don't know anything. I haven't been down here all day.
Get rid of those arched eyebrows, Martinello. You know something. What is it?
Wait a minute, Candy. I'll do the questioning. In the first place, Carlo, was there or was there not a body in here?
Sure there was. He can't deny it. Here's a check for $2,000 signed by Martinello himself.
Well, Carlo?
Yes. There was a body, all right.
Who was it? Friend of yours?
No, Inspector. I never saw him before.
Why did you call Miss Matson? Why didn't you come to see me about it?
Well, you know, Inspector, the police...
Just because you were once arrested for bootlegging, Carlo, is no reason to be afraid of the police. Well, I'll put a couple of my men on the job and see what we can turn up.
What? Is that all you're going to do, Mallard?
No. Right now, I'm going back upstairs and have some of Carlo's scallopini.
Mallard, are you out of your head?
Look, Candy, in order to have a murder case, you've got to have a body. Obviously, we're fresh out. And until your pal with the devil's costume turns up, I intend to live my typical everyday life. Don't forget the mushrooms, Carlo.
There are times when I get so mad at Mallard, I want to scream. I didn't, though. I only scrammed. I hung on to the $2,000, however. I felt I deserved it just for getting my curiosity aroused, and it was aroused plenty. Corpses don't get up and walk out of iceboxes by themselves. But after all, Mallard had a point. There was nothing to be done without a body. So I went home and waded into a stack of dirty dishes that had been piling up. Then I fixed dinner and started a new stack of dirty dishes. Got a book and ducked into bed. In the morning, I had an idea. After breakfast, I went down to the corner of Broadway and Columbus. That's where North Beach does a neat blend with Chinatown. On the corner was a Joe who sold newspapers. I'd known him for some time, and he seemed to like me. Hiya, Butch.
Well, hello there, lady. How are you?
Good. Can't complain. Who won the football game yesterday?
Yeah, funny thing. I got all the news right inside here for 7 cents.
I get your point. Give me a chronicle, will you?
Sure. Here.
Thanks. Who do you like in the feature at Bay Meadows?
A goat named Candy.
What did you say?
There's a pig named Candy running in the 7th. Take it or leave it.
What a tip.
I don't get it. Well, what's really on your mind, lady?
Here's a 20. You can play it on Candy all for yourself.
Well.
Do you know a gent named Martinello Butch? Yeah. He owns the Charlemagne down the block.
Sure. What about him?
That's what I'm asking you. What about him?
Oh, he's all right. A little screwy, but he keeps his nose clean.
Is that all?
Yeah. Should there be more?
I don't know. Thanks, Butch. I hope Candy pays off. I was getting nowhere, that was for sure, and the rest of the day went the same way. Dead ends, blind alleys. I checked as many loose ends as I possibly could, but I was still stuck in a quandary. But the crusher claimed late in the afternoon when I got a copy of the late paper and read where Candy came in at Bay Meadows and paid $32.20. And I hadn't had sense enough to get aboard. When I got home, the phone was ringing. Hello, Candy Matson.
Oh, you're Candy Matson. I should play a fanfare.
Oh, hello, Rembrandt, dear. How are you?
Like an October morning. Every single one of me paws is breathing great, huge gulps of air.
What?
I just had a facial, Dove. Most invigorating.
What on earth for? I loved your old pores just the way they were.
Candy, you've forgotten.
I have? Forgotten what, Rembrandt?
We're going to the opera tonight.
Oh, Ducky, I'm sorry. I had forgotten. I'm afraid I'll have to renege.
Now, Candy, you promised, and I don't care what you're involved in. It'll do you good.
But, Rembrandt, I'm working on it. Perhaps you're right. Okay, I'll get ready.
Wonderful, dear. Pick me up about 7:45, will you?
Pick you up 7:45? Yeah.
Oh, and another thing, Lamb. We may have to do some entertaining afterward. Do bring some cash, will you?
Mm-hmm.
That's the girl.
That Rembrandt, always stony broke. I guess photography isn't what it's cracked up to be. I didn't mind, though. He's been a friend to me on more than one occasion. Well, if I was going to the opera, I had to start thinking in operatic terms. I fished around in the closet and came up with something that would have done any woman's heart good. One of those strapless affairs that you can't stop breathing in for one moment, otherwise the opera is no longer the main attraction. I powdered perfume, pouted in rouge, and took off after Rembrandt. But just as I started to leave... Just a moment.
Well, get a load of the Duchess.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be Halloween for another couple of weeks yet.
Oh, very funny. Come on in, Millard.
What are you decked out for, Candy?
Something you wouldn't understand. I'm going to the opera.
Oh, I love the opera. Any horse opera with Tex Acuff in it.
That's what I thought. What's on your mind, Millard? I've got to pick up Rembrandt in 10 minutes.
Well, I was just driving by, so I thought I'd stop and tell you the news.
News? About what?
We found El Diablo.
The guy in the icebox?
Yeah. Martinello identified him. He was floating in the water off Aquatic Park.
Any lead on him?
The best. He was Salavini, the second baritone with the opera company. That's all, Candy. I hope you enjoy the performance tonight.
A baritone with the opera company. Well, that explained the costume, but it didn't explain a lot of other things. I walked down the stairs with Mallard. He got in his squad car, flicked on the flashing red light, and with a burst of his siren, rolled down the street. I'd have to speak to Mallard about that. All the neighbors had their heads out of their windows as I climbed into my car and followed. What an exit. I picked up Rembrandt and we drove up to the Civic Center. I found a place to park. A minor miracle. The last time I went to the opera, I had to drive almost to Palo Alto and come back by train. Rembrandt's friend must have been very influential. We had seats in the Diamond Horseshoe. They were presenting Tales of Hoffman, and a friend of mine, Dorothy Warrenchild, was singing the role of Antonia. It was a fine performance, and after the last curtain, I took Rembrandt, and we went backstage to see Dorothy. This is your dressing room, Rembrandt.
Yes?
Hello, Dorothy. This is Candy Matson. I have a friend with me.
Oh, do come in, please, Candy. Candy, how are you?
Couldn't be better. Dorothy, may I present Mr. Watson? Rembrandt, this is Miss Warrenchild.
I'm delighted. You're in magnificent voice tonight, dear.
Thank you. Sit down, won't you? I've only a moment. We're rehearsing some of the scenes in Faust tonight.
Rehearsing after a full evening's performance?
It has to be done, Candy. Our baritone disappeared. We've had to replace him with a new man.
Yes, yes, I know. By the way, Dorothy, I heard you on your Standard Hour broadcast a few weeks ago. It was a wonderful performance.
I'm glad you liked it, Candy. I always look forward to those.
What are your plans, Dorothy?
Well, the season closes here, and then we open in Los Angeles.
Oh, yes, of course.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Come in.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had guests.
That's all right. Oh, Candy, I'd like to introduce Rolf Herberts. This is Miss Matson and Mr. Watson.
Nice to meet you.
Mr. Herbert is our new baritone.
Oh, yes.
That's why we're rehearsing tonight.
I won't take any more of your time, Dorothy. I just thought we'd save a few moments of rehearsal if I told you that I don't move in that last scene. I sing upstage. That will leave you free to take as much stage as you like.
Fine, Rolf. That will save time. Thanks.
Oh, not at all. Glad to have met you, Miss Matson. Mr. Watson.
Nice to meet you, sir.
See you on stage, Dorothy.
Yes, Rolf. Rolf has a wonderful voice, and he's a good actor, too. You know, I think he'll be even better than Salavini.
I've seen him before.
Oh, yes, he's been in pictures and on the concert stage, and in opera, too. But he's never really had a good break. This might be it. Uh-oh, that's it, Candy. I'm sorry, but I'll have to leave.
Certainly, Dorothy.
Say, why don't you stand in the wings? You can watch the rehearsal if you'd like.
Oh, I'd love it.
Come on, then. Follow me.
All right, the places, everyone. Places.
This is all right, Candy. You can stay right here.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Glad to have met you, Mr. Watson.
Also, as we used to say in the theater, go out there and kill them.
See you later.
Where is Miss Warrenshaw? There you are. Herbert? Where's Herbert?
I saw him just a moment ago in the dressing room.
Well, it's late. We've got to keep moving. Please, somebody find Herbert.
From way up in the heights of the stage, the opera house was pierced with a blood-curdling scream. That was no ordinary scream. It was the scream of death. You wait here, Rembrandt. Keep your eyes open. I'm going up to have a look. That scream wasn't in the score of Faust. I punched the button for the backstage elevator. It's a good thing they work fast and are speedy. Once inside, I pressed the button for the fourth gallery. I got out. This was the top of the opera house. The place was loaded with old sets, props, papier-mâché alligators, gold goblets. Then, over on the other side of the catwalk, I saw it. The body of a man all crumpled and distorted. I hit the catwalk and ran over. It was 100 feet above the stage, and as I looked down, I could see a score of strained faces looking up through the darkness. I got on the other side and bent over the body. It was that of Rolf Herbert.
Candy, down here. I think your man just dumped down underneath the stage.
Again, I did a Mel Patton. The elevator shot me down to the stage level, and there was Rembrandt, wild-eyed.
He came down the elevator on the other side, Candy. Then he cut across the stage and down those steps.
Come on, Rembrandt, follow me. I may need help. We ran down the steps and into the bowels of the stage. It looked like a nightmare, a myriad of cross beams of steel for the rising stages. We cleared those and went around by the chorus dressing room. There was only one out. I remembered it. A door over in the corner, very seldom used, but it was open. It led into a long tunnel with giant steam pipes running overhead and to the right. This went underground over to the veterans' building. Down by your feet, there's a stream of water flowing in a trough. It's the old Hayes Valley Creek. Our killer decidedly knew his opera house. As we entered the tunnel, I could see him up ahead running like crazy, so we took off after him. We made the other side, and it breaks into a big engine room. As we came into the opening, I looked around. The engineer was lying on the floor out like a light, blood spurting from his scalp. Then I glanced up. There was another door. This led into the veterans' building itself and an avenue of escape onto Van Ness. I ran up. Then as we got into the long corridor, I saw Martinello breaking for the door. Stop! Stop, Martinello!
Stop! You think I am a fool?
I do if you don't stop.
Try and get me.
Okay, pal. You asked for it. It was the first time I had ever shot a man. It didn't feel good. But he lived. And later, the doctors of law gave him a little pill. The cyanide kind they dropped inside the gas chamber at San Quentin. Martinello paid his debt. Details? Sure, I'll fill him in now. Martinello loved to sing. Ray Mallard had told me that. For years, Carlo had been hanging around the opera house hoping to step into a role. This season, a director had jokingly told him that if he ran out of baritones, he'd let Carlo take over. Carlo took him seriously. He lured Salavini down to his restaurant on a fake emergency call, costume and all, and did him in. But then he became frightened. That's when he called me. It was worth $2,000 to have me hush things up. But I don't operate like that. He had a hunch I was going to tip off Mallard. That's when he removed the body from the icebox and dumped him into the bay. Carlo had also been at the performance of Tales of Hoffman. That's when he learned that they'd wrestled up Rolf Herbert to sing in place of Salavini. By this time, Martinello was obsessed with the idea of singing in the opera house and wouldn't stop at anything. Right after Herbert left Warren Chold's dressing room, he managed to get Herbert into the elevator and up to the fourth gallery behind the stage. That scream was produced by a 6-inch stiletto through Herbert's heart from the hands of Martinello. And that's when our chase began. I hope I never see that tunnel under the opera house again. That Mallard and his sentiments. It was he who gave me that gun just a week before, for my birthday. He said I needed protection. Well, darn it, I do. But I can't get Mallard to believe me. Instead, he just gives me guns.
Listen again at this same time next week. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight were Harry Bechtel as Rolf Herbert, Jerry Walter as Carlo Martinello. Henry Leff plays the role of Inspector Mallard and Jack Thomas as Rembrandt. Dorothy Warren Schold, star of the Standard Hour and the San Francisco Opera Company, was heard as herself. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and produced by Monty Masters. With the exception of Miss Warren Schold, any resemblance to actual people in tonight's play is purely coincidental. Candy Matson comes to you from San Francisco. This is Dudley Manlove speaking. You are tuned for the stars on NBC.
Good evening, dear listeners. I am Barnabas Collins. I hope you will forgive the intrusion, and I hope that you have been enjoying Broken Sea Audio Productions' OTR Swagcast. Please allow me to introduce the next haunting episode of Dark Shadows.
We plan for the future. Looking forward hopefully and innocently. But there are those who would interrupt our plan. Those who would plot against us to destroy tomorrow.
I almost wish I hadn't told you.
You know you would have regretted not telling me. I sent you for information and you got it.
Look. Devlin might have asked Vicky to marry him, but that doesn't mean she's going to say yes.
I know how she feels about him. I know what her answer will be.
Well, so what if she does get married? She isn't that important to you, is she?
I'd think you'd know me by now. I should think you'd know that I always get what I go after.
But what's the point of getting angry now when everything might work out okay?
Devlin's plans will interfere with mine sooner or later in one way or another. I cannot permit this to happen. Devlin is an obstacle. He must be dealt with.
You don't have to go that far.
Yes, I do. Devlin must be removed. Permanently.
To do this.
Willie, I'm tired of your objections. I will determine what is right for me as well as for you. You'd do well to remember that.
I'm just saying you don't have to go that far.
Nothing you say will dissuade me. Burke Devlin will be destroyed.
Okay. Your mind's made up. But won't you listen to me for a minute?
What for?
If you give me a chance to talk, I think I could make some sense.
All right, then go ahead. Talk.
Okay, let's just look at it for a minute. When did you figure on getting rid of Burke Devlin?
Immediately.
How?
The same way as I dealt with your friend Jason McGuire.
I see. You think he can get away with it?
Of course. There isn't the slightest doubt in my mind.
I mean, you're sure you won't be found out? I mean, really sure?
There's never been a word said about Jason McGuire. Never an inquiry. Nothing. I doubt that there ever will be.
That might be so. But things were different in Jason's case. He had been practically run out of town. The sheriff ordered him out. People didn't like him. They were glad to see him go. He was on his way. He had no forwarding address. People had no idea where he was going.
Which made it all the more ideal for his timely demise.
Okay, so it was a good setup. But Burke Devlin is something else. He's one of the most important men in Collinsport. People expect him to be here permanently. He's got roots in this town.
So?
So Jason never had that. Nobody cared that he was gone.
And you contend that people will care when Burke Devlin disappears?
Oh, they'll more than care. They'll want to know where he is. And he can't just vanish into thin air.
That's precisely what he will do. Without a trace.
If he suddenly disappears, they'll have a search for him like they never had before. They'll comb every place in the area. It'll be worse than it was with Maggie Evans. Now, you see, it's the same kind of disappearance. They'll tie the two of them together. We won't be as lucky as we were the last time. They'll come to this house, and they'll search it. I know they will come.
Burke Devlin's body will not be here.
I know that. But there are other things that are here. Things that you don't want anyone to know about. Now, the cops will come here. I know that, Sheriff. He'll have a search warrant. He'll go through this place from top to bottom. And he'll go down there in that cellar. And he'll find a coffin. And he'll want to know about it. All about it. That it could happen.
Yes, I know.
Oh, I know you want to get rid of him right away. But if you gotta do this, why not wait? Pick a better time.
All right, Willie. I'll pick another time. But my plans require that Devlin be put out of the way. And you will help me do it.
You're not going to let me go in?
I haven't decided yet. I don't know if I can yet let you go.
I wish I didn't have to go in.
I don't. Let's take a drive up the coast and then stop at the Blue Whale for a nightcap and then back to Collingwood.
No, it sounds wonderful, but I'd rather save that for another night.
Or as long as it guarantees me another evening with you.
Night is too special. Too wonderful, too unforgettable.
The question I put to you tonight was the toughest one I've ever asked.
I know.
I wish you could have said yes tonight.
I wish I could have too. But thank you for giving me the time to think.
Oh, not too much time. Remember, you promised. Okay?
Would you like some coffee?
Oh, no, thanks. I'd better be getting on and let you get to that serious thinking.
You know what? I've never thought of myself as a married woman. I suppose it's because I've always thought of myself as taking care of someone else's children.
I'm offering you the chance to take care of your own.
Hello, Vicky. Bert.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Goddard.
Hello, Liz.
Did you have a nice evening?
The nicest.
Thank you.
Am I interrupting?
Oh, no, I was just getting ready to leave.
Oh, well, may I talk to you for a moment, Bert?
Of course.
I think I'll go upstairs now. Good night.
Good night.
Should we go in here?
All right.
I'm so glad to see that Vicky's going out so much.
She's a wonderful girl. It gives me great pleasure to make her happy.
And now it will give me pleasure to see you happy.
How do you mean?
Well, I've thought it over carefully, and I've decided to sell you the house.
You sell it to me? Well, that's wonderful. That's marvelous.
Would you like to discuss the business end of it tonight?
Well, I tell you, Liz, I feel so good about it. I'd rather leave the hard bargaining up to our respected lawyers. We've had our last conflict.
Should we drink to that?
Absolutely.
Good luck, Bert. Don't let anything stand in the way of your happiness.
Nothing ever could.
She's gone to bed.
I couldn't sleep. I had an awful lot on my mind.
I just had a talk with Bert.
Oh?
I told him I decided to sell a house to him.
That's wonderful. What did he say?
Exactly what you just said. He was so delighted he couldn't even talk business.
He wants that house so badly.
I know. And in a way, I think he deserves it. Bert's changed. He has stability now. Something he never had before.
Yes.
You're very fond of him, aren't you?
Yes.
He's very fond of you.
Oh, is he?
I can tell by the way he looks at you.
Well, I wouldn't read too much into a glass.
I think he's very serious about you. I think his feelings are more than casual, more than just temporary.
And I think you're very perceptive.
One doesn't have to be perceptive to see that the strong feeling between them.
Isn't that obvious? I suppose that's why I couldn't sleep tonight.
What do you mean?
I was thinking about Burke.
Then there is something.
Yes. I was thinking about me, too. Who I am, what I want, where I'm going.
What brought all this on?
Burke.
Then there is something.
You see, tonight he asked me to marry him.
Oh, I didn't know it had gone that far.
Well, I think it was there all the time.
What was your answer?
I told him I'd have to think it over very carefully, which is what I've been trying to do.
Well, what do you want?
I don't know. No one's ever asked me to marry them before. I've never really thought about it, or even the possibility. Now I'm faced with a decision, and I don't know what to do.
Of course you do.
No. Sometimes I wish I didn't have to make that decision.
And you have to make it sooner or later.
Mrs. Stoddard, would you help me decide?
I wish I could, Vicky, but this must be your own decision. Marriage is a very important step.
Well, then, tell me this. If you were against my marrying Burke, really against it, would you tell me?
Yes, I would.
Well, that's a help. I suppose what you're trying to do is to force me to make up my own mind.
You're capable of it.
Thank you. You've helped me. You've helped me very much.
Last thing he said to her was, "But I'm calling you from Paris." I thought it was one of the funniest stories I ever heard. Excuse me. Barnabas. You're just in time for one last drink before they close the place.
Thank you.
What'll it be?
Brandy.
Brandy. And another one of these. Let's sit over here.
You seem to be in the midst of a celebration.
Oh, not really. I just feel rather good.
Well, that could be reason enough for a celebration. What is it that makes you feel so good?
The future.
Yes.
Let's call it the future.
Well, I'm glad to see you brimming with such optimism.
Your enterprises must be going well.
Oh, this has nothing to do with business.
No, this is purely personal.
Personal? Well, I won't intrude by inquiry.
Oh, I wouldn't discuss it with you now. No, it's not quite definite. Yet.
Oh? Then there's the chance that this bright prospect of yours might not come into fulfillment.
Well, nothing is really ever positive until it actually happens. Thank you.
And then perhaps your celebration is premature.
Perhaps. But I was feeling so good, I didn't want the moment to go by unnoticed. What about you, Barnabas? What about your prospects?
Perhaps we share something in common. There's the possibility that very soon, I too will have something to celebrate.
Oh. Am I to be included in your celebration?
I assure you it would be nothing without you.
Barnabas, I wonder about something.
Well, what is it?
I wonder whether we really like each other.
Why do you wonder that?
Well, the way we talk to each other, the way we intimate things without actually coming out and saying what's in our minds. As if we're playing a card game for very high stakes. Well, what an interesting observation. And an interesting simile. A card game. I'll tell you something. I think of our relationship more as a duel. Two superb swordsmen with highly sharpened blades. You thrust, I parry. I thrust, you parry. I prefer my simile to yours. Why? Because mine is merely a game which one either wins or loses, depending on the cards. And mine. But yours seems to be a matter of complete desperation. Life or death. To lose a duel with you would be to lose everything. Including one's life. But isn't that the purpose of a duel? If a duel is necessary. Is it? Well, that can't be determined until the sword is in one's hand. But you make me sound so evil when all the time the stakes in a card game could also be life or death. I think we've played ourselves into a stalemate. A temporary one. Shall we drink then? To either the deck of the cards or the sabers, whichever it's to be. Well, that certainly is worthy of a toast. You know, Barnabas, you interest me enormously.
As an opponent?
Oh, not necessarily. I'd like to get to know you better. Know me, or about me? Knowing about you is something you make rather difficult. If you remember, I tried that the other evening. And all I could really learn was the fact that you once lived in London with a cousin. Oh, what was his name?
Bradford. Niall Bradford.
Yes, Niall Bradford. Now, how could I forget an unusual name like that? I think he's getting ready to close up.
Well, thank you for the brandy.
Thank you for playing the game.
Hello, operator. Connect me with the overseas operator. I want to place a call to London.
Dark Shadows is a Dan Curtis production.
Of another night has fallen over Collinwood, but the stillness is deceiving. For in the old house on the Collinwood estate, a strange alliance has been formed, an alliance between the living and the dead.
I'll be giving you your injection in about 20 minutes.
Well, Doctor, I was beginning to think that you weren't going to come out of your little playroom for the rest of the evening.
Injections take time to prepare and must be prepared with caution. Don't you realize that one mistake could mean your life?
Wrong, Doctor. One mistake could mean your life.
You haven't put that album down all evening. It isn't as though you hadn't seen it before.
I like looking at the family album. Especially this last few weeks, I've particularly liked and been fascinated by the portrait of Jeremiah Collins.
Why?
Because he bears an uncanny resemblance to Burke Devlin. I loathe the sight of both men. And now, if only Burke Devlin could be as dead as Jeremiah Collins, I think I'd be a most contented man.
For the sake of these experiments, you're not to harm anyone. That includes Mr. Devlin. The risk would be too great.
I merely wished he were dead. I didn't say that I was actually going to kill him.
But you'd like to, wouldn't you?
I'd relish the opportunity.
Just don't make the opportunity.
Doctor, I'll be a lot easier to get on with if you don't start giving orders. I find it a most unattractive habit in a woman.
Huh? You seem rather sensitive today. What's bothering you?
Nothing.
You've been unusually preoccupied with that album for the past few days.
I find browsing through the family album a relaxing exercise.
I doubt that. And I don't think you're doing it just to look at the pictures. I think there's something else that's disturbing you. Something about your family.
Doctor, you're beginning to annoy me.
In fact, I think it has to do with a specific member of your family. Could it be a child, Barnabas? Could it be your sister, Sarah?
Don't be absurd. Little Sarah's been dead for almost 200 years.
So have you, Barnabas. But you've come back. Why can't she?
What a ridiculous question. Sarah's was dead when she was 10 years old. She was the soul of innocence. She hadn't been afflicted by the same problem I had.
find it very egotistical of you to think that only your kind can come back from death. Haven't you ever heard of ghosts, Barnaby? Or does the thought of a ghost frighten you?
Doctor, you are beginning to wear on my patience.
On the contrary, you're wearing on mine. The first experiments, a few days ago, were very successful. The initial injection created a dramatic change in the structure of your blood cells. But there's some emotional disturbance that you've been having that's been very detrimental to our experiments.
I haven't the vaguest idea what you're talking about.
I am talking about the possibility of the failure of these experiments. Oh, now, neither of us are fools, Barnabas. We both know that there's been talk of a little girl having been seen in these woods. There was a little girl that helped Maggie to escape from you. The description of this little girl could very well be your sister, Sarah. Now, if Sarah has indeed returned, we must find her before she destroys our plans.
There's no if about it. She has come back.
How do you know that?
Because she made contact with me the other evening.
How?
What difference does it make? What matters is that she's here. And I don't know why.
Did you actually see her?
No.
Well, then how do you know that it was her?
Because I heard her singing. I'd know that voice anywhere.
Where were you when you heard her singing?
Never mind.
Where were you, Barnabas?
It doesn't matter where I was. The important thing is that I heard her, that's all.
I think where you were might very well have something to do with why Sarah tried to contact you. Where were you, Barnabas?
In Maggie Evans' room. I went to visit her to make certain that she knew as little as you said she did.
You couldn't take my word for it.
Frankly, no. I had to convince myself that Maggie Evans was no longer a threat to me. I discovered that I had good reason to.
Do you mean to say that Sarah actually stopped you from killing Maggie?
I told you. I heard the song that she used to sing, and I began looking for her.
Well, why didn't you kill Maggie first and then look for her?
I don't know.
I think you do.
Doctor, it's time for the injection.
Injection can wait. I want to know why a little girl of 10 can make you react this way. What special powers has little Sarah?
I don't think you'd understand, Doctor.
Try me.
Sarah was an exquisite child. She was the sum of everything that made living on this earth worthwhile. Her innocence, her simple beauty elevated her. And the holiness of her heart's affections were pure and gentle. I loved her in a way that I loved no other human being. But I don't understand what's happening now. By what process has she come back? And why?
Has it occurred to you that perhaps it was you who brought her back?
It's ridiculous.
It isn't as ridiculous as it sounds. It's altogether possible that you could have willed her to come back. Unconsciously, of course.
But why?
Maybe because she symbolizes that side of yourself that you've lost.
I wish I were able to see her and talk to her.
I think we ought to think of ways of making that possibility come true. Well, we can go downstairs now. It's time to give you that injection.
Vicky.
Oh, Mrs. Stoddard, I thought you were going to bed early tonight.
Well, I found out that I wasn't that tired. What about you? Haven't you got a date with Bert?
Yes. He should be here any minute.
Have you made any decision about his proposal?
That's what I was thinking about when you came in.
And?
I haven't decided yet.
Well, don't let me or anyone else rush you or influence you. It's a very important decision. Take your time and make it carefully.
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Barrett.
Good evening, Miss Hoffman. You must be very dedicated to your work.
Why do you say that?
Well, you devote every day to it and most of your evenings.
Oh, I think your cousin Barnabas is partly responsible for that. The man's knowledge of the past is endless and fascinating. Once I start talking to him, I find it difficult to stop.
Hello, Miss Hoffman.
Hello.
If you'll excuse me, Bert should be here any minute, and I promised him I'd meet him out on the terrace.
Oh. We may see you later. Barnabas is going to come by and take me into Collinsport.
Oh. Well, I hope I do see you. Good night.
Good night. Good night. She's a lovely girl.
Yes. Well, Miss Hoffman, I'm interested in knowing what kind of progress you're making with your research.
Matter of fact, I wanted to discuss that with you. I was going through some of Barnabas's books in the library, trying to find out something about one of your ancestors who remains a mystery to me.
Who is that?
Sarah Collins. Can you tell me anything about her?
Well, I'm afraid I can't. I know that Sarah died when she was a little girl, but that's about all.
Mm-hmm. Well, there may be something in the main library here at the house.
Why is Sarah's life so important to your research?
Oh, it isn't all that vital. We historians sometimes tend to get sidetracked by some curiosity about unimportant things.
I'm glad we're having this talk, Miss Hoffman. We've nearly never really discussed your work in detail, and I'm interested in knowing more about it.
Well, I think you might find it easier to understand if you were to read the book. Of course, you will be the first person to read it before it's published.
Well, I look forward to that. What other books have you written?
Oh, my books have mainly been of interest to scholars. I don't think you'd ever have heard of them.
Miss Hoffman, I didn't leave Collinwood for 18 years. In that time, I did a great deal of reading. I might surprise you.
Mm. You already have. I must confess that I'd heard you were something of a recluse. I certainly was not prepared for the generous and gracious person that you are.
Thank you.
Those 18 years must have been a great emotional drain.
Yes, they were.
But you survived, and you've made a new life for yourself, and I think that's admirable.
If you're as nimble with the written word as you are with the spoken word, Miss Hoffman, you must be a very interesting writer.
Why do you say that?
Well, when we started this conversation, you were the subject, and abruptly I became the subject. I find that very interesting.
Setting couldn't be more perfect. Warm summer evening, terrace overlooking garden, sky full of moonlight, and a man and woman in love.
And you, Mr. Devlin, are late.
I'm sorry. I got hung up in town with Blair.
Is there any time, day or night, when you won't work? I think this is something I should know before I give you my answer.
Well, I've never been a 9-to-5 guy. If I had to live the same routine day in and day out, I'd go stir crazy.
But isn't every marriage supposed to settle down into some sort of a routine?
Yes, but the routine depends on the two people involved. Now, I'll admit you'll find me an unpredictable character. Occasionally temperamental. Sometimes maybe even a little unreasonable. But I can promise you one thing. You will never be bored with me. There won't be one dull moment in our lives.
You sound as though you have my mind all made up for me.
Well, I'm a little impatient when it comes to waiting for anything. A habit I developed in business.
Well, what sort of business did you have to see Mr. Blair about at this hour?
Oh, nothing earth-shaking. He was just getting some information for me from London.
Information about what?
Hey, we're getting off the subject, aren't we? Which was supposed to be you and me, remember?
Huh? But, Burke, do you realize how little I know about you? All I know is how I feel about you. But I don't really know you. What you've done, where you've been, or how you got to where you are today.
It isn't really necessary to know all those things.
But I think it is. I think that I should know everything about the man who's asked me to marry him.
Vicky, I didn't propose to you so that we might be able to go back and discover the past together. I can offer you love. And as much security as any woman could want. And I hope as much happiness. But I can only do it in terms of the future, not the past. The past has already been lived. There's nothing we can do to change it. So let's forget it, shall we? Look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I'm rushing you. Of course, you have a perfect right to take all the time you think you need.
Burke.
What?
Yes.
Yes, what?
Yes, I'll marry you. Impatience, temperament, and all.
Vicky. Hey, what was all that talk about not knowing me?
Well, I said I know the way I feel about you, and that's what's important, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Any doubts I've had the past few days, they've had to do with me. But I think I know what I want. I've made up my mind.
You'll never be sorry, Vicky. Believe me.
Good evening, Elizabeth.
How are you, Barnabas?
Well, thanks to Miss Hoffman, I've never felt better.
Miss Hoffman?
Yes, she's been filling my evenings with very pleasant and stimulating conversation. I only hope her research keeps her with us for a good long time.
Thank you. Miss Hoffman. My cousin may be rather shy and retiring at times, but there are those who think he has the monopoly on old world charm.
Mrs. Stoddard, I have something I want to tell you.
What is it, Vicky?
Oh, would you like to be alone with Mrs. Stoddard?
No, I want everybody to hear. Burke and I are going to be married.
Vicky, that's wonderful. I couldn't be happier for you.
Have you set the date yet?
Oh, no, we just got around to settling the question.
Oh, I hope you'll be very happy, Vicky.
Thank you. I know that I will.
And that tomorrow night you have a wonderful...
Jeremiah.
The lucky man. Oh. Congratulations, Bert. I think you're both very lucky.
Thank you, Bert.
Barnabas, you haven't said a word.
You know, of course, that I'm in favor of anything that would bring you happiness.
I know. And I do appreciate it.
Well, now, I trust that you will excuse me. I promised Miss Hoffman that I would take her into town, and it is getting late.
Of course. Good night, Vicky. Congratulations, Mr. Devlin.
Thank you.
Good night, Mrs. Stoddard.
Good night, Vicky. Good night, Elizabeth.
Bye.
Mr. Devlin,
good night.
Sometimes I don't understand Barnabas at all. He was in such good spirits when he arrived. When he left, he seemed... rather pressed.
The thought of that lovely girl being married to someone as class and vulgar as Burke Devlin is appalling.
She's in love with him. Don't you understand that?
It's not a question of understanding. I don't believe it.
Oh, don't delude yourself.
Doctor, how much longer will our experiments take? And what are the chances of complete success?
Well, just a few more weeks. And the chances of success depend completely upon your cooperation.
Very well, then. You have my complete cooperation.
What brought this on?
When you are successful, I will then turn my attention towards bringing Vicky to the kind of love that Burke Devlin could never give her. And the marriage that was just announced will never take place.
Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209. Ladies and gentlemen, before we commence tonight's Candy Matson story, it's a very great pleasure to welcome as our distinguished guest this evening the widely read radio columnist of the San Francisco Examiner, who conducts his own radio column under the title Day and Night with Radio and Television, Mr. Dwight Newton.
Thank you, Dudley Manlove. Recently, I conducted a popularity poll to determine our readers' favorite radio program originating in San Francisco. Heading the list, and a top-heavy favorite, was your Candy Matson program. In behalf of the Examiner readers who participated in the poll, I am happy to present this award, which reads as follows. 1950 San Francisco Examiner Favorite Program Award. This certifies that readers of the San Francisco Examiner have voted Candy Matson their favorite local radio program in a poll conducted by the underside writer of the column Day and Night with Radio and Television. Congratulations to all who participate on the Candy Matson program, to Monty Masters, who writes and directs it, and to you, Natalie Masters, the Candy Matson star.
Thank you, Dwight Newton. We're doubly proud of this award tonight because next week's program will mark Candy Matson's first birthday. From all of us here at NBC in San Francisco, to Dwight Newton, the San Francisco Examiner, and most of all, you, the listeners, who've made this award possible, our very sincere thanks.
We continue now with Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Just a moment, I'll be right there. How do you do?
You are Candy Matson, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. And who are you?
Willa Gray.
Come in, won't you, Willa? Is there something I can do for you?
I don't quite know how to explain this, but it's my brother.
Your brother?
Maybe you've heard of him, Miss Matson. Gordon Gray.
Why, sure, the songwriter?
That's right.
Who doesn't know him? He's written almost as many hit songs as Irving Berlin. What about him, Willa?
Well, like many people I know, Gordon is a crime student for relaxation. He reads all the books, listens to all the radio programs, and naturally he's heard and read a great deal about you.
Well, I'm flattered.
When I suggested talking to you, he agreed immediately.
Talking to me, Willa? What about?
Well, it's his mental condition, Miss Matson. He's suddenly become extremely childish. All day long, he sits at the piano playing nothing but uncoordinated notes.
Are you sure they're uncoordinated, or is it some new style he's trying to develop?
Miss Matson, you're familiar with Gordon's work. Songs like Lazy Old June, The Tenderness of You. What he's doing now is just musical gibberish.
How well I remember Lazy Old June. I was just a kid in high school at the time. Oh, are you living with your brother, Willa?
No, I'm not. Just as well, too. I don't think I could take it.
Why do you say that?
These foolish notes he plays. says he's working on a thing to be called Symphony of Death. That someone is going to kill him.
What? Now you've got me interested.
I hope so, Miss Matson. He won't talk to me. Every time I drop by, Gordon just sits at the piano, laughing horribly, and playing these kindergarten notes. As I said, he's a great fan of yours. Won't you go and just speak to my brother?
Sure, I'll see him. Gordon Gray with a shattered mind. What a pity, if true. Think of all the jukeboxes that would have to settle for promissory notes.
Candy Matson, San Francisco's well-known gal private investigator, merely trying to get her penthouse on Telegraph Hill cleaned, and she walks into a stack of memories. Memories created by a songwriter named Gordon Gray. Symphony of Death. It never became a popular composition, but it will always be on Candy's all-time hit parade, a tune she'll never forget, because it brought about a very strange chain of events and a fascinating finish to the entire story. Oh, and the in-between department? Well, here she is, the gal who never suffers from gaposis, Candy Matson.
When I went into the cold, hard world to make a living for myself, Gordon Gray was an American institution. That's when he wrote his never-to-be-forgotten The Rhapsody of You. I'd had no idea that Gray was in San Francisco. The last I'd heard, he was in New York, working on the score of a brand-new musical. So when his sister confronted me like that, naturally, I was caught a bit off base. She wrote Gordon's address for me, and like the rabbity little elf she seemed, ducked out as abruptly as she came. Then I dressed, drove over to an apartment house on Powell Street, just down from the family club. I pressed the button. It blew an ugly little noise back at me. I entered, went up the stairs to 221. The door opened.
Yes?
Mr. Gray?
Yes, that's right.
I didn't call you on the phone. I thought I'd just more or less barge in on you. I'm Candy Matson.
Candy Matson? Do come in. Oh, please, do come in.
Thank you.
So, my little sister finally got up enough gumption to call you.
Yes, she came by this afternoon. We had quite a nice little chat.
A nice chat? With my sister? Impossible. A little mouse doesn't know how to put one word after another. Oh, here, do sit down, won't you? Place is a mess. I've got manuscripts all over the floor, the highboy, the whatnot, everywhere. Highball, spot of sherry?
Thank you, no, not right at the moment.
As you say.
I beg your pardon?
It's nothing, really. I'm just thinking of my monstrous joke. I'm going to be killed, you know.
Yes, so your sister said. Do you mind?
My sister, young... She's young enough to marry a grandchild. Do you know what? She thinks I'm slipping my cable.
Do you mind if I call you Gordon?
I'd love it. Providing I can call you Candy.
I'd despise myself in the AM if you didn't.
Candy, you're just as delightful as I had you pictured.
Thanks, Gordon. Now, frankly, what do you think? Are you slipping your cable?
Of all the idiotic... Of course not.
Willis seems convinced you are.
Willis, a mere babe, a suckling.
What about this new thing you're working on, Gordon, this Symphony of Death?
She told you about that, too, huh? That's part of my monstrous joke, Candy.
Want to confide in me? Let me know what this joke is?
I don't mind in the least. You have brains. Not many people have brains in this world, Candy, but you do. And because you have brains, I'm going to give you a challenge.
Okay, let me have it.
Oh, no. The challenge will only come after he kills me.
He? Who are you referring to, Gordon?
That's part of the challenge, Candy.
I see. Do you really believe that someone's out to kill you?
But of course! That's the delicious part of the whole thing. I'm going to be killed. It can't be avoided. That's why I'm writing my Symphony of Death.
Oh, sure, now I see.
You're making fun of me, Candy.
No, I'm not, Gordon, really. It's just that, well, I've never met anyone who was happy about the prospect of getting knocked off.
I don't mind, actually. I've lived a full life. I've seen the world, made lots of money, been wined and dined by people in all walks of life. My music will live after me. That's all I care about.
Now I can understand.
There. You see, that's why I like you. You have brains. Shall I play my new composition for you?
If you like.
Very well. As you will discover after I'm dead. It's all part of my monstrous joke. Excuse me. Pay no attention to the technique, Candy, my dear. My fingers aren't quite as supple as they used to be. There. What do you think of it?
Gordon, I think it's a great, monstrous joke.
I knew you'd see it. It's part of the joke. You're really sharp. I knew it. That's part of the joke, and you can see it.
You pay wonderful compliments, Gordon. Thank you. But don't you think this Symphony of Death is a complete departure from your usual style? From something like, well, the Rhapsody of You, for instance?
Certainly, certainly. It's because of him. I had to write something dedicated to him, didn't I?
Well, to scramble a dangling participle, who's him?
The man who's going to kill me.
As I left, I tried to shake the picture of a cackling man playing one-fingered doodles on the keyboard, but I couldn't. The impression was indelible. When I arrived home, I was greeted by the sight of a familiar auto parked out in front. It was my number one boy, Inspector Ray Mellard of San Francisco Homicide. I invited him up to sit a spell and chew the fat.
What's new, Cupcake? I haven't seen you for several days. Seems like weeks.
Ha! Huh, a compliment. That means you're after something.
I am not. Can't I ever say something nice without you misconstruing?
Oh, okay, okay. Compliment accepted. Good. What brings you around here this time of day, Mellard, dear? Aren't you on duty?
That's the trouble. I've been on duty for almost 48 hours straight. I had to take a little breather for myself.
Working on a deal?
Yeah, a hot one. No leads, no clues, no nothing.
For a slight consideration, I might be inclined to help you crack the case, Sherlock.
By the way, what are you working on?
Nothing but hope and what's left of the bank account.
You mean to say the great lady Private Eye is temporarily at liberty?
I mean to say just exactly that.
Well, if I'm any judge of your business ability, you've got enough money tucked away to buy the Philadelphia Athletics from Connie Mack. What do you do with all your loot, Candy?
Sew it in hair mattresses and sleep on it. Oh, excuse me a moment, Mellie.
Sure, go right ahead.
Oh, hello, Willa. I didn't expect to see you so soon.
I hope you won't think me a nuisance, but I just had to see you.
I understand. Come in.
No, thanks. You've been to see Gordon. I just spoke with him on the phone, and he told me.
Yes, that's right.
What do you think, Miss Matson?
Very sad, Willa. How long has he been like this?
Just a week or so. He flew in from New York, and I could see the change in him right away.
How long ago did he leave for New York?
He left Hollywood for New York last month.
Was he all right then?
Oh, yes. Just fine. He seemed so happy. He just finished writing the music for the new show in the East. But when he got there, the backers, as they say in show business, told him the music was no good. He said he'd return to the coast and redo it. But instead of going back to Hollywood, he came here. Took that apartment on Powell Street, and he's been holed up there ever since.
Do you think being told his music was no good had anything to do with his present condition?
Oh, I'm sure of it, Miss Matson. He's always been such a sensitive person.
No, Willa. I've known several people who snap momentarily under a terrific strain. Maybe it's not as serious as you think.
But what am I going to do?
Well, first, he needs aid. Immediately. I know a Judge Conway here in town. I think he'll help you get Gordon committed to a sanitarium where he'll get the finest medical aid available.
A sanitarium? Oh, no, Miss Matson, that would kill Gordon.
It's either that or have him get progressively worse.
I suppose you're right. Would you talk to Gordon? Explain what must be done? I don't think I'm capable.
Sure, I'll do it, Willa. You sit tight and I'll call you just as soon as I speak with Judge Conway.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I imagine I should inquire as to how much you charge for your services.
No, forget it, Willa. Getting Gordon Gray back to normal will be pay enough.
You're just wonderful, Miss Matson. Goodbye.
Poor kid. So helpless.
Poor kid is right. I couldn't help overhearing. She's about 90% mouse.
She and Gordon must have been poured right out of the same mold as far as sensitivity is concerned.
Is that the Gordon Gray, Candy? The famous songwriter?
That's the one.
And he's cracked up?
Mm-hmm.
Downright sure. Well, thanks, pal. Just the sight of you has picked me up considerably. I'll be getting back to the grind.
Mellie, dear, hold me tight for just a moment, will you?
Sure. Don't let Gordon Gray get you down, Cupcake.
Well, it wasn't a very pretty sight. And I've got to face him again. Thanks for the hug, Mellard. I'll return it someday. Mellard released his grip and left. I snapped my ribs back in place and steeled myself for the ordeal ahead of me. It wasn't going to be easy, but it had to be done. So once again, I found myself ducking down Green Street, over Powell, across California, and down the roller coaster of a hill to Gordon's apartment. He answered the door, and I was met with just as much enthusiasm as before.
Candy Matson, I was wondering where you'd been. You've been gone for ages, darling. Do come in. I've got a surprise for you. When did you get back from Europe?
When did I get back? Oh, just a day or so ago.
Your letters were wonderful. I especially adored the one from Naples. What a time you must have had.
Yes. Yes, quite a time, Gordon. How's the new symphony coming along?
That's the surprise, my dear. It's completed. Long last, it's finished. To be perfectly frank, Candy, I think it's great. I've been in touch with Toscanini. He's going to give it its premiere performance at Carnegie next month. I've already sent him the revised manuscript. Can you picture it, Candy? A hushed crowd. The maestro wraps his baton. The orchestra comes to full attention. Then that magnificent, firm downbeat of Toscanini's and Symphony of Death is making its debut. First, the Allegretto. Then, the Molto Andante. The audience is at first inclined to scoff, to think that Gordon Gray could write serious music. From lazy old June to Symphony of Death. Too much of a step, they'd say. Then, Toscanini glides into the Conmoto. The audience tenses, not believing their ears. Little by little, they understand what Gordon Gray is trying to express. Then, as if it were not enough, Toscanini moves into the breathtaking finale. It soars, it moves. It transports everyone in Carnegie Hall into another world. And abruptly, Symphony of Death. The Symphony of Death is over. The audience arises as one. They shout for Gordon Gray, the composer. History's being made. More shouts for the composer. But Gordon Gray isn't there. Gordon Gray's dead. Because of him.
Gordon, listen to me.
Because of him. The world will have to be denied any further music from the pen of Gordon Gray.
I said, listen to me, Gordon.
Oh. Go on.
I want to talk to you. And you've got to listen very carefully. You're sick. You need help. Your sister and I are arranging to have you sent to a home nearby. They'll have you on your feet in short order.
Sent away?
Yes.
That means he will visit me sooner than I'd planned. Very well, Candy. Tell Willa to do whatever she thinks best. I won't give her any trouble.
It's for your own good, Gordon. Believe me.
I know. Candy, you never went to Europe, did you? You were here earlier this afternoon. Isn't that right?
That's right.
You just went along with the gag.
That's right, Gordon.
Yeah. You'll be here sooner. Much sooner than I expected.
Gordon Gray went into the other room and lay down on his studio couch, face down. That's when I tiptoed out of the apartment. If only I could have peeked into the future, I'd never have left. Because that was the last time Gordon Gray was seen alive. I went home, fixed myself something to eat, turned the radio on low, and sat down with a book called That Frail Vessel, a book about the behavior of the human mind. Out of one corner of my ear, I heard it. It was the 10 o'clock news over NBC with Sam Hayes. And there it was. The body of Gordon Gray had been found in his apartment. The book clattered out of my hands and I sat there for a moment stunned. But only for a moment. Another second I was driving over to pick up an old pal of mine, Rembrandt Watson. There was a good reason for it. Rembrandt studying to play the cello. On the way over, I noticed the headlines. The police had the net out for Gordon's sister, Willa. Rembrandt was home. He was agreeable to going to Gordon and Gray's apartment with me. And before you could bat an eyelash, providing your batting average was good, we were in said apartment, alone.
My word, girl. What a garish-looking place.
It didn't belong to Gordon personally, Rembrandt. He was merely renting.
He still doesn't deny the fact that it's garish. Can't be the truth now. Why did you want me to come to this Victorian mausoleum with you?
Just a hunch, Ducky. Are you still taking cello lessons?
Taking them? Girl, don't be ridiculous. I'm now giving them.
Even better. Just as I thought. The boys in blue haven't touched anything. The manuscript for Symphony of Death is still on the piano. Can you play single notes on the piano, Rembrandt?
Well, I can try.
Good. Run your hangnails over this.
Strange. This isn't music. Just a series of notes with no meter, phrasing, or regard for the proper time to the bar.
Exactly. Play it just the way it's written.
Very well.
And call out the notes as you go along. I think I'm beginning to understand Gordon's Symphony of Death.
As you say, D, A, D, and for no reason at all, there's a rest, Candy.
D, A, D, and a rest. Go ahead.
E, G, G, and another rest.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes D, E, A, D. Then a long gap in the manuscript.
You know what that spells musically, Ducky? Bad egg dead.
Utter confusion.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I don't think so. As we say in the movies, continue on.
F, A, G, G, E, D. No timing at all.
That spells fagged.
So am I. However, it goes on like this. D, E, A, F. Another rest, then B, E, E. Fini.
What?
Through. It's kaput. Finish.
Let's see now. Bad egg dead. Fagged. Deaf. B.
Candy, love. If you're going to the notes of the musical scale, you could spell practically anything out of A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, even from a tune like Ragmuffin.
But this means something. I know it does. Gordon told me it was going to be a challenge. What? Who's there?
Don't be alarmed, Miss Matson. It's only me, Willa.
Willa, how did you get in here? Don't you know the police are looking all over town for you?
Let them look. I don't care. My brother's dead. I read it in the papers.
How did you get in here, Willa? The cops are surrounding the place.
I just walked in through the front door.
Oh, wait till Mallard hears about this. Willa, you didn't kill Gordon, did you?
No, Miss Matson, I didn't. Honestly, I didn't.
I believe you, Willa. Because I think I know who did kill your brother.
You do? Tell me. Oh, please, tell me.
Down at the Hall of Justice. Okay, let's go. Oh, Rembrandt. Bring along that bust of Beethoven sitting on the piano, will you?
Pleasure, dear. I'll be glad to. Candy, this thing must weigh at least 15 pounds.
Well, you're the only man in the group.
Oh? Oh. Very well. Come along, bust. Hall of Justice or likewise.
Candy, what are you doing here at a time like this? Can't you see I'm busy?
Sure, I only want to see you busier. This is Willa Gray, remember her?
Just the girl we're looking for.
Well, save your breath, Mallard. Willa's innocent. She had nothing to do with Gordon Gray's death.
Okay, you know so much. Who in tarnation did?
Put that bust of Beethoven on Mallard's desk, Rembrandt.
I was wondering how long I'd have to hold this thing.
What in the name of Schenectady do I want with that?
There sits your murderer.
Candy, are you out of your head?
No, it's so complex, it's simple, Mallard. Gordon Gray works like a beaver for 2 months writing a musical score for a new Broadway show. He takes the score to New York. The producers tell him it's no good. It's the first time it's ever happened to Gordon. It does something to his mind. He broods. He comes to San Francisco. His mental condition becomes worse.
So is yours.
For your concern, yes. But let me finish. Here, take a look at this.
Bad egg dead. Fag. Deaf B. Okay, I give up. What does it mean?
Bad egg dead. Gordon Gray is referring to himself. Fagged, that means he had come to the end of his rope. His musical knowledge and creative ability were running dry. Gray had nothing more to live for.
Okay, Miss Edgar Allan Poe. What does Deaf D mean?
Well, that had me stumped for a while, too. Then I got to looking at this bust of Beethoven standing on the piano. It seemed to dominate the entire room. Then I put two and two together and got Ludwig von Beethoven. B was an abbreviation of Beethoven. Beethoven was deaf. Deaf B.
I don't get it.
You will. Beethoven is going to hit an all-time low. The answer lies inside that plaster bust, I'm sure. Stand back, Mallard. I'm about to splatter a genius. Take a look.
Good gravy. A small fortune in greenbacks.
That's right. And a note, too, if these eyes don't deceive me. Congratulations, whoever you might be. You learned the true meaning of my symphony of death. You've also just executed my killer, von Beethoven. Now perhaps he knows how it feels to be cracked up, too. Thanks for participating in my little joke, my last charade. This is my entire estate. Put it to whatever good use you may see fit. Gordon Gray. Oh, Rembrandt, do me a favor. Take Willa outside. The poor kid's pretty badly shot.
Certainly, Dove. Come along, young lady. I still don't get it, Candy.
It's easy to fill in the gaps now, Mallard. Gordon's music was falling apart. He knew it. So he started swiping melodies from obscure Beethoven themes. But Gordon, with only his flair for writing popular music, couldn't grasp what Beethoven had originally intended. Consequently, the things he wrote were terrible. The more he copied, the more he realized that Beethoven was becoming an all-ruling obsession. It was Beethoven in the morning, Beethoven at night, Beethoven 24 hours a day, until it drove Gordon completely out of his mind.
That I can understand, but what's this joke he mentioned?
Well, he was a great mystery fan. That's why he wrote this gibberish thing called Symphony of Death. A group of notes that spelled out bad egg dead, fagged, deaf bee, and so on. All part of his warped mental condition.
Well, that makes sense. Except for one thing. How did Gordon Gray die? Exactly when he wanted to die.
Mallard, dear, I now know there are some mighty strange things in this world. Even a completely sick mind such as Gordon has great powers of concentration. Gordon was like a captain without a ship, like a man who's been married 50 years who suddenly has no wife. You probably won't believe it, Mallard, but Gordon Gray, knowing that his mind was shot, and knowing, too, that every last bar of creative music had been drained from his heart, his soul, willed himself to die. Fantastic? Not necessarily so. There are many stories about animals who have done the same thing. If animals can do it, why can't a human being with a so-called higher plane of intelligence do it, too? So that's what Gordon had done. Taken his life savings, sealed them into a plaster bust of Beethoven, along with his last laugh note, and sat himself down to die. In Gordon's mind, Beethoven had killed him. I can understand why, too. For just before we left his apartment, I found another manuscript. I had Rembrandt run over it. Note for note, it was the Moonlight Sonata, backwards. But in one respect, Gordon had outscored the old masters. He had completed his symphony of death, and Beethoven was in little pieces. That left him one up on another old master, a fellow named Franz Schubert. He'd left one entirely unfinished.
The characters in tonight's story are entirely fictitious. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. Actors heard this evening were Phyllis Skelton as Willa Gray, John Grover was her brother, Gordon Gray, Jack Thomas as Rembrandt Watson, and Henry Leff as Inspector Ray Mallard. From the star of our program, Natalie Masters, and from her husband, Monty Masters, who writes and directs Candy Matson, and from the staff of the National Broadcasting Company, we wish to express our deep thanks and sincere appreciation to the San Francisco Examiner and Dwight Newton, radio columnist of the Examiner, for tonight's presentation, naming Candy Matson as the number one program in the San Francisco metropolitan Bay Area. Listen again next week at the same time for excitement and adventure. Just dial
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
The program came to you from San Francisco. Dudley Manlove speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.
Lothar Tubbs.